Good morning. I'm Cliff, and I'm an alcoholic. I usually say Cliff Roach, but Paul C. is here, and he doesn't like you to do that on the microphone, so I just said, I'm Cliff. Very anonymous today. I notice this is a noisy as hell podium, so I do have notes. You better thank God I have notes. And when I give a traditions talk or a concept or something, I believe I have an obligation to do my homework and have some notes. I hope I can read them. do you notice, though, this recent years, I see people giving their pitch with notes. I think they drank too long. Or they're lying. Or both. And so I will be referring to notes. I'd like to introduce my stand-in Al-Anon today, my daughter Kitty. That's enough. My Al-Anon. Always introducers. My Al-Anon. You know how they introduce us? Have you met my alcoholic? Sit up, boy. Sit up, sit up. But my Al-Anon's up with the other heavyweights up in San Jose somewhere getting rained out. They're doing an Al-Anon thing, planning the demise of AA probably. It's always spooky being a speaker at a traditions breakfast, because actually it's an inviting you to give your opinion. And nobody likes you to have an opinion in AA, because it never agrees with theirs. And so you're in big trouble right away. And all you're going to get today is my opinion about the traditions, and you know what that's worth, just the same as yours. Nothing. Last year you probably don't even remember who the speaker was. Hope that speaker isn't here. But you sure as hell remember who got the book last year for the newcomer, don't you? A wonderful guy named Skip, who had, after many years of sobriety, had a slip and had the courage to come to this meeting and stand up and come up here and take that book. I was off somewhere else, but I cried so much I had to take salt tablets, you know, because the bravery of the guy and the courage of the guy. And tomorrow, by the way, I talked to him on the phone yesterday, he's going to have a year tomorrow. So it works. I'm going to try to be as non-controversial as possible here today. All my life I was a radical rebel. I wanted to tear everything down, burn it up, blow it up. I didn't care which. You know, either one would have sufficed. But since I've been in AA, I've kind of become a traditionalist. You know, I just get in line and march. I probably will say controversial things today, because that's kind of the nature of this kind of talk. But I was only controversial once, and a lot of you have heard this story. Back when I was delegate in 1976 and in 77. In 76, the gay groups wanted to be listed in the international directory as gay groups. And I was against it. I didn't think we should be talking about our sexual preferences in the international. I was a homophobic is what I was. But anyway, I was stood on principles, really, though, shaky principles. And, of course, at the convention, at the conference, I argued against it and yelled and hollered and screamed and yelled. And they passed it anyway. And as it's turned out, it's exactly was the right thing to do. The majority ruled. And like any grown-up person, I came back to Oceanside, and Al McGeehy and I started an important men's group. Only two idiots that were dumb enough to put their name on a paper. And we sent it off to New York with $20. Cost us $10 a piece, you know. God, poor Bob Pearson in the New York office, he called me. He said, "What the hell are you doing now?" I said, "No, by God. We're going to call groups by their sexual preference. We want to be listed." I tried to get Phyllis to start a frigid woman's group, but... nobody would have believed that. And so you can see what a grown-up you have talking for you here today, you know. And as I say, it's only my opinion. Whenever I hear the traditions read, I always flash back. There's people in this room remember. We had a guy named LBJ, who was a newcomer a number of years ago. And he was really sick when he came in. He was really shugging. He wasn't that good a reader anyway. So when the night we had him read the traditions, and that was the year I was delegate, by the way. And he read, "Our leaders are but twisted servants." Everybody in the room went. What was the one in the Al-Anon? In 12, they say we must guard with special care the anonymity of all AA members. And I was meeting one night, this little gal read, "We must get with special care the animosity of all AA members." Sometimes the truth comes out funny. I don't know if any of you, a few weeks ago, three months ago, in the Grapevine, there was a little gal, wrote an article to the Grapevine. She was 24 or 25 years old, and she was sober about 6 years. And she wrote a little article what the hell am I talking about today? traditions, that was it. And she said, it's very easy to tell groups that go by the traditions and groups that don't. She had groups who go by the traditions, people get sober there. And then B, people stay sober, and C, they carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. They are self-supporting. They support AA in general, financially and with their time and effort, and that they are courteous to one another. And then she said groups who don't go by the traditions, in reverse order here, are not courteous to each other. They don't support AA as a whole. They don't even support their home group. And they don't carry the message to others. And they don't stay sober. Consequently, people don't get sober. You know, if I didn't say anything else today at all about that, would be the story right there. Years ago, when I was new and I first came knocking on Margie's door down here, that's the first copy of the big book I ever saw. And I had been a 5-year loser around the program, you know, around the program. About, you guys, did you have to pay less for those tickets? You had a better view. How would you like to look at the back? Anyway, I knocked on the door, and I'd been this 5-year loser, a big mouth, overeducated, pompous jerk loser. And I've often wondered what I would say to me if I would open the door and see me there. And I'll never forget Margie. I've never seen anybody so glad to see me in my life. And she and Bill took me into their home that night and made me welcome. Because they know the secret. See, the secret is you can't keep it unless you give it away. And they knew that when I got here. And they taught me that. And that's how I've been able to stay here over 25 years and become an old-timer. No, an old-timer to me is somebody who had 25 years when I got here. Isn't that interesting? I guess you'll never feel like an old-timer yourself. But Bill and Margie conditioned me to carry the message and do whatever has to be done here because they know that's the only way you can stay sober. When I was new, Bill used to take me up to Laguna Beach to the men's stag at the club there. Those were old-timers, those guys. There wasn't a guy in that room didn't have 1,000 years, seemed like to me. And unfortunate for me, when I was new, I would whine and snivel. And Well, I would whine, and they loved it. They used to watch through the blinds for me. They'd say, oh, he's got the teacher with him tonight. You know? And they would just rip me to shreds. They would just chew me a new one. You know, they'd annihilate me. They had more fun with me. So one night I was driving back with Bill, and I was hurt. And I had told Bill that those guys had no idea of how sensitive I am. And I said that maybe 7 times. I should have watched his knuckles on the wheel. They were getting white. And he turned to me very quietly. Usually he yelled at me. But this night he said it very quietly with great intensity. He said, let's get this straight, Cliff. You are not sensitive. You are an immature son of a bitch. That's what you are. I told him, I prefer sensitive. It's all the same to you. But it's absolutely true. Talking with Joni the other day, I said, if I drink and die, I'm going to have my wife put it on my tombstone. Cliff Roach died of immaturity. Because I suffer from a terminal case of immaturity. It will kill me. And so later on, I'm going to talk about how the traditions have touched on that immaturity. Several years ago, we took a meeting up to Laguna Beach. One of those meetings where our group takes a meeting. We're going to do that again pretty soon, the AA workshop group. We went up to this meeting in Laguna Beach and put on the meeting, and I happened to be the one with the most sobriety that night, so I got to lead the meeting. And that was one of the greatest spiritual experiences I ever had on the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because each person I would introduce would come up there. I had seen them come in the door and seen what they were like. And there was a little gal named Connie, I remember. She was so introverted and so, she was like Debbie when she was new, you know. You'd say, hi there, Connie. Hey, how are you? You know. And then there was, you know, like Al McGee and me and other blowhards. People that came in knowing all about everything, blah, 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 blah. You know? And every person that got up there had been changed. You know, the blowhards had modified and had some humility, and these little people that came in that were just little amoebas, they got to the podium and shared. You know, many of the people in this room tonight were here a few months ago when Debbie shared at our meeting, and I remembered her when she was. That can't happen. Nobody can change that much. And as I got up and down, introducing these people. It's this thing flashed on me when I was a kid, when I was 17, I went in the Navy, and we had a 12-week boot camp. And when I remembered when we went in the boot camp, there were some guys that were really fat. And then there were some real skinny guys, you know. And we went 12 weeks doing, and we all did exactly the same thing and ate the same slop. And at the end of the 12 weeks, the fat guys were skinnier. And the skinny guys were fatter. So evidently, whatever we were doing, we didn't enjoy it, but it was good for us. And that's why the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are so important. They work for us because at some level, all alcoholics are the same. There's just 12 simple steps. But if we work them, we all change because we are the same. Every time I talk about the steps, so I think about the young Irish priest comes running into the rectory where the old priest is there, and he says, Father, he says, you'll never guess what I saw. I said, a young man came in the back of the church. He was on crutches, 2 crutches he had, and he threw some holy water on his left crutch, and he threw it away. And he took some holy water, threw it on his right crutch, and he threw it away. And the old priest said, God, it's a miracle. Where's the young man? He said, flatten his ass out by the holy water. My wife and I, one time, I was on my master's program, and we went up to a meeting of intellectuals. It was a weekend of, the late Margaret Mead was speaking. It was in Los Angeles in the convention. Maybe a couple of thousand brilliant intellectuals like myself. And one of these guys was giving a talk and was just quiet in the meeting.
You know, because this guy was a, I think he's the guy that invented Rolfing. To get a hold of him. And he said, very profound, he said this, I'm going to say it the way he said it. He said, he's talking about breathing. He said, remember, breathing and talking about breathing are two different things. Everybody went, oh. My wife Pat and I, we sat there, and about 20 seconds went by. You know, we went. I said, did that guy say breathing? And we started laughing. And we couldn't stop. Did you ever do that when you go? Everybody. It's a little damp, that's true. But we went back to the motel where we were staying. We were still hysterical. And we started doing it. We said, talking about the traditions and the traditions and talking about the steps. Because, you know, talking about it doesn't do much. Doing them is what does it. And so that if all of any of us that come here, if we work the steps, they always work because we are the same. Now, the traditions were invented because we are all unique. There is not one the same individual, thank God, some very unique ones. I'm looking around here now, unique to the point of being put away. And that's why we have the traditions, because we are all different. I read an old timer was reading the traditions one time when I was going to be the speaker, and he said, The traditions are a record of our experience. And I thought, the record of our bad experience. We do not have a single tradition here that wasn't put down, except that our forefathers had screwed it up so bad they decided, oh, we better not do that anymore. You know, alcoholics are, you there's a door here and you walk into the wall. What the hell? You know, some Al-Anon said, there's a door there. Shut up! You know, and after your nose is bleeding, you say, I think I'll try the door. And then congratulate yourself on your brilliance. So every one of these traditions came about because our forefathers, mainly Bill Wilson, had screwed things up. You know, there's that group up in Long Beach, they built a big bunch of money up in their treasury, and then they couldn't decide what to do with it, and they had such a big fight, they all got drunk. All of them, the whole group got drunk. That showed them. And one of the great stories years ago, I heard these old-timers share, there was a meeting there in Pasadena in the very early days, and some guy went out and drank, and so one of the guys said, I'll go get him. Pretty soon there were two of them out there, you know, and there's six left in the meeting. So they sent another one, and he never came back either, see. So when the three of them phoned, the five that were left said, no, 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 no. You come back here. We ain't sending any more scouts out there. You know? Our common welfare should come first, you know what I mean? And they learned that the hard way. And I don't know about you, but to me, the idea that the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous were just a bunch of goofy, sick nuts like me, that's very comforting to me, that they weren't up on Mount Olympus floating around in white robes. You know, they were just silly, goofy alcoholics that saved this, that created this thing and gave it to us. The traditions are really ours, aren't they? Thank God we have them, because we are all unique. You know, in Clancy's garage years ago, it was a garage. We kind of fixed it over for a place for newcomers to stay, you know, between getting sober and detox. And just had a rug on this crummy old floor. But across the whole back wall it says, but you don't understand. My case is different, you know. And anybody that's been around for an hour, you just love that when some new guy says that. Well, I'm different. Sure you are, you different. No, we just love to pound. But we are. We're all different as hell. And the traditions protect us from each other until we can grow up. And protect us from ourselves until we can grow up. Tradition four, each group is autonomous. You know, there's a kind of a place in AA where we can find our own kind of weirdos. You ever notice that? You can go to a meeting and, you know, like a touchy-feely candlelight meeting, if that's what you like. Makes me nervous. One time years ago, I went to a different meeting every day. I was on vacation from school, and I went up. On Monday night, I went to the Venice meeting, Venice, California, where the debris meets the sea. There was one car in the parking lot and 57 motorcycles. Harleys, of course. You know, I'll never forget the gal that read Chapter 5. She had this tank top on. She bent over to read. I didn't hear a thing she said. And, you know, the four-letter verb, whew, they used it as a noun, an adjective, an adverb, compound, pronoun. Just no end. Put a mother with it and you're off and running, you know. But I want to tell you something. It was a terrific meeting. It was a good AA meeting. And the next night I went to Fallbrook. And they were talking about the frost getting the rhubarb. And everybody kind of shared. But I was warmly welcomed, and it was a loving, wonderful meeting. And, you know, every night that week I went to a different meeting. Friday night I went to the old meeting down at the men's meeting down at 6th and Penn. And they used to have a row of easy chairs along the back where you couldn't sit in one of those chairs if you didn't have 20 years. They'd throw you the hell out of the chair, you know. And then all these old guys would sit there. And if you got one of them to smile, you had a successful night, you know what I mean? Or if you had a slip, they'd all go. Real barefoot, down home, basic AA, great meeting. And, of course, my group's the Thursday night AA workshops, kind of dressed up Venice. And I thought at the end of that week, I got to thinking, my God, isn't it wonderful that we have a fourth tradition? That we can have any kind of meeting we want. And we're autonomous and we don't have to have a meeting. Nobody can set up what a meeting's got to be like and how you have to dress. But, you know, one thing I'm going to think while I'm thinking of this, when I'm talking about the traditions, in my mind, you'll have to understand me, I leave out sponsorship. Because sponsorship is a very separate thing in Alcoholics Anonymous, in my opinion. I heard Clancy talk this about this a lot of times. Sponsorship is the only place in the world that I know of where the person being directed is given permission for the person to direct them. In other words, if you come up to me and ask me to sponsor you, you're in a sense hiring me as a sponsor, and you can fire me anytime you want. And so if I tell you to do something that's good for you and you don't want to do it, you can tell me to go to hell and go your way. But you do it because you know that's what's good for you. But you have given me permission to tell you what to do or to give suggestions. I had to suggest shorter. Never mind. So we are all unique. And the traditions are there to protect us from our uniqueness. And notes, tradition one says that our common welfare should come first. And if we're unique, we're going to have to surrender that. We don't have any leaders, the second tradition. Nobody can tell us how we're going to do it. Tradition three says we could have seven earrings and one in our nose and one on our belly button. If we have a desire to stop drinking, we belong here. I don't like that one, but that's the way it goes. You know, hair down to your butt, too, if you want to.
And we're not organized. We're not organized. God knows we're not organized.
But this is just a thing of mine. You know, we're all different, and yet we're all unique. But it seems to me that everybody in AA is either a Bill or a Bob. You know our founders? Did that ever hit you? You know, Bill and Bob. Can you imagine any two more different people in the history of the world? I mean, they were just exact opposites, weren't they? Bill's this promoter. You know, he's running around starting things. He blew 13 traditions before we even had them. You know what I mean? Wrote 14 books and 139 pamphlets. Just never stopped charging, racing around. And old Bob, he never left Akron. Give you an idea of him. He never left Akron, Ohio. He said, if it works, don't fix it. Good. Pretty profound, but it ain't exactly big literature, you know what I mean? So here's these two guys, just the exact opposite of each other. And there has never been anything written, anybody who ever knew them, anything they had ever anything to do with them, who didn't, they never had a crossword between them. Those two men loved each other for fun and for free their whole lives. Of course, Bob died fairly early in the program. But there never is a record of those guys having a disagreement. Now, their followers had lots of disagreements. But those two are a great example to us. Because we're all Bills or Bobs, it seems to me. And Bobs annoy the hell out of me, if you want to know about it, because I'm a Bill. I mean, Pat T back there, this is the first traditions breakfast he ever came to. That's because he's got Harry for a sponsor now. Oh, Pat's a Bob. That's all politics. You ever been to a meeting of all Bobs? Oh, jeez. One thing worse is a meeting of all Bills. Hey, coach, get me here, come here. You know, Bobs piss me off. That's all there is to it. But sometimes, you know, when I get myself wired, when I'm flying around, bumping to myself, coming the other way, I go find Pat. And he says, what's the big deal? And once in a while I turn him over and the sun gets the moss on the side, man. Because we need each other. You know, number one, our common welfare should come first. I think Bills need to really look at Tradition 6, no endorsing or lending your name, and 9, of course. We're not in charge here. We don't need to organize anything else. And, of course, anonymity. That goes without saying. The most important aspect of all of this, the traditions, you know, they read that at the meetings to say the traditions are to the group's conscience as the steps are to the individual. We hear that go by us a lot of times. And, of course, the original members, they didn't have any problem with that tradition about the group being the most important thing. Because that's all they had. How'd you like to have been a member of that, say the one in New York, maybe 12, 14 people in the city of that time, 5-6 million? Only time in the history of the world that people had stayed sober, surrounded with the world going crazy. Maybe 12 people in the whole meeting, huh? And one of them went and got drunk. Can you imagine a fear? That group was everything to them. But we have over 500 groups just in North County today. You know, we have thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of members. What's the difference if somebody gets drunk? Unless it's me. I think we better go back and take a look at those traditions and how important they are to our groups. Because if we don't have a group, we're not going to survive. I can't stay sober. And you can't stay sober. But we can stay sober. We're just lousy with meetings in AA nowadays, aren't we? There aren't very many groups left in AA anymore. And the traditions are about groups. They are not about meetings. My little late sponsor, Bill, he used to watch it come in. And the guys he sponsors, he would see where you would be of value to the group. And then he would tell you that you would do that. He didn't say, you know, I think it would be a good idea. I remember he came up to me and said, you're a GSR. I went, okay. I went, told Pat, I'm going to be a guesser. I don't know what the hell. She said, sounds like something you could do. I wonder what she meant by that. And or he would see, you know, where you could be good at intergroup, or he would see that you'd be good for H&I. And he would just send you in there, and he was always right. He believed that when you belong to a group, you have a place in that group. And that's up to you to find out where your place is. Everybody brings their alcoholism here, and everybody brings their own particular brand of insanity here. But all of us bring gifts here. There's not anyone in this room or anyone outside this room, because the people I'm talking here today, this is like selling Christianity to the choir when you're talking about it. The people who need this meeting today aren't here, except Pat. He's only stayed sober 24 years without this, you know. But everybody, I believe, my sponsor taught me that everybody who comes into AA has a gift. And if I don't bring my gift, and if I don't give my gift, if I don't be a part of that group, that I'll probably have to die. And I believe that's true about you, too. San Marcos, Saturday night meeting, they have a little thing. Pat's here today, I got to be careful. They read this little thing about the group. I just hate it. I always sit like this. You know, it talks about our groups, has little, but it's really a beautiful, true thing. I always tease Pat and call it the Epistle of St. Pat. But we better get back to thinking about groups. We have a pamphlet that the General Service Office put out about group inventories. And we did that back in the 70s. Almost every group in AA did a good group inventory. I think probably a group ought to do an inventory at least once a year. Back a long time, many years ago, I was getting ready to do a traditions talk, and I was reading a book by Eric Hoffer. He has nothing to do with AA. He was a very brilliant man. He worked as a stevedore his whole life, and yet self-educated. Never even went through the fifth grade. I think he was an alcoholic too, but that's neither here nor there. But he was a very fine writer. But it happened to be that I was getting ready to make this traditions talk, and I read a quote of his, and the quote said, "In America, every great movement has become a cult or a corporation." I went, my beloved AA, you know. And, you know, it's kind of scary when you look at it. We see some cults around, don't we? The cult of the personality, right? I've known several cult leaders. I tried to be a cultist one time, but nobody would join. That's the breaks. That's a lot of work, too, to be a leader, to be a guru. Hard work. But the ones I've known, I've only known maybe five in my sobriety, gurus. A couple of them are dead now. But you know, those guys that I knew, the groups that they were belonged to, always seemed to have a GSR, always seemed to support the General Service Office in the intergroup, always had an intergroup rep, were always functioning, going. I suppose there's others, but I haven't seen them. The ones that I get a kick out of are the ones who are anti-personality cult. You know the kind? There's a guy in San Diego that wherever Clancy talks within 50 miles of San Diego, this guy goes to the meeting so he can get up and walk out. Halfway through the talking, I said, you realize the power you've given that man over your life? That you will drive, never mind, I can't stand that son of a bitch. So, I don't know which is more dangerous, the cultists or the anti-cultists. But we have service cults, Hamarco. You ever meet guys like that? I'm sure you have. You're not in service? Second class AA. Even more obnoxious, the H&I cult. You don't go to the prisons, you weasel. Get out of the program, you don't belong there. You know, the worst thing about cults and that sort of thing is that it becomes them and us. In 76, when I was delegate, it was the delegates against the General Service Office and the trustees. It was a horrible conference. We were just screaming and yelling all the time. And on Wednesday, Lois Wilson, Bill's wife, came over from the Al-Anon convention to talk to us at lunchtime. And she said, I don't imagine she planned this. She said, you know, it's not. I know it's not like that over here, but over at the Al-Anon convention, they've got into this them and us business. She said, you know, there is no them and there is no us. There's only us. We all went, it's a lot better conference after that. You know what I mean? And that's the second great danger is this business of becoming them and us. I've heard people slamming the General Service Office people, the alcoholics who work in the General Service. I've never met a more dedicated, loving bunch of people in my life than those alcoholics that work in the General Service Office. How do they become them and us? How does that happen? I've seen areas of the country where the intergroup and the area assembly is them and us. Hasn't happened around here yet, and I hope it never does. The other thing about being in a cult is you lose your sense of humor. Did you ever notice that people in cults have no sense of humor about their cult? They might laugh about other stuff, but they're not laughing about the cult. And you can't stay here if you don't have a sense of humor, especially if you don't get a sense of humor about yourself. That's the hardest thing I ever learned. I could always laugh at you. I could see where you were a butt right off, you know. But boy, it's hard to laugh at yourself, but they help you here. My old gang sure always was glad to help me, you know. And then, of course, the corporation part. I think that's the part that really scared me. Every great move has been a cult or a corporation. It really sounds scary, doesn't it? That we could, until you think about it, then you go. How can you have anarchists become a corporation? Tell me that. One time, Pat remembers a bunch of us. We were going to L.A. in a car, and we got talking about what would be the theme song for AA. And I don't know. We had some pretty good ones. All of a sudden, I said, "I did it my way." And everybody went, "Yeah, that's it." The argument was over, boy. There was a theme song for us. I did it my way. And so it'd be kind of hard to make a corporation out of that, huh? And besides, each group is autonomous. So you can't dragoon anarchists who are in an autonomous group. Besides, the most important aspect of it is we hold the purse strings. The groups support the General Service Office and the whole structure. If we stop sending the money, they go away. Unless, of course, we over a long period of time, fewer and fewer of us send the money, so that they raise the price of literature a little bit each year. Until finally one day, the majority of the money that supports the General Service Office is from the literature. Then they don't need us anymore. And it could be conceivable then that a corporate structure on the top could happen even if the rest. But we all know the secret, don't we? None of that is really important. The only really thing that's important is the fellowship. I mean, if we've read the book and there's five of us, we could stay sober the rest of our lives with nothing else. So what's really integral is the group, and that's why they keep it autonomous. So I guess we never will become a cultural corporation. I was kind of hoping to take it over, but that's the way it goes. There's two basic, you know, I believe, two basic underlying principles that underline all of the traditions. Now, these two principles, one of them applies to some of the traditions, and the other one applies to some of the traditions, and sometimes they apply to all the traditions in some aspects of it. And these two principles are the basic reason why the traditions have to work. They have to. And the first principle underlying the traditions is, it's one drunk talking to another. Alcoholics Anonymous has been the biggest success in the treatment of alcohol in the history of the world. If you took all the people who got sober from all the treatment programs and all the other ways of getting people sober, religion or whatever, and put them in one pile, Alcoholics Anonymous pile would be 10 times bigger. It's come from 2 million from two. And it didn't become 2 million from two from some goof like me standing at a microphone. It got to be 2 million from two from one drunk talking to each to another drunk in the front seat of a car on the way to a meeting. I got Alcoholics Anonymous from Margie's husband, Bill, in the front seat of a car on the way to my first meeting. And I kept Alcoholics Anonymous because he was like me. I never told my sponsor anything where he did some horrible, rotten, filthy, stink thing about myself. And he, you know what he'd do? Oh, yeah, I know that. And he had 8 years of sobriety. He remembered doing that too, you know. And so the identification, one drunk talking to another, is what we're doing here. And so we identify, the process of identification is what we're talking about. And in our service work, you know, the 12-step call is still the basic service that a person can provide. I mean, if everybody just in this room here were on the 12-step list in central office, we'd have to redo the whole thing over and make it a lot bigger. There are many, many people in Alcoholics Anonymous today, sober many years, who aren't even on the list in central office to do 12, not even on the list. I guess maybe they think we'll run into a burning bush and get a newcomer. I don't know. And there are people, since I've worked in central office a lot of times, I have called people and given them a 12-step call, and they say, no, thank you. And they're on the goddamn list. I've got to do my laundry today. Oh, well, sure. First things first. Little Connie was here today. I love her. She was. You could call Connie and say, there's a woman downtown Vista drunk in a phone booth with a machete. Connie'd say, what corner? What phone booth? And she would go. In front of the late Fran P. She was the best call. You would call Fran, give her a 12-step call, and she would always say, oh, thank you, Cliff. Thank you. Like you'd given her a gold doubloon. And those are the people that understand the basic service of Alcoholics Anonymous. One drunk talking to another. In less than 60 years, 2 million from two. So those traditions seek to protect that identification so that it doesn't get muddled and messed up and screwed up. It's one drunk talking to another. And all the conferences won't make up for that. And all the roundups and conventions and international conventions don't mean anything when it comes to that one drunk talking to another. And that's why the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. How could you identify me if you don't have a desire with me if you don't have a desire to stop drinking? You know, if you have a desire to stop falling in love with sheep, you'll have to work out something else. You know what I mean? But if you have a desire to stop drinking, then we can talk because we have an identification here. And the second underlying principle, as I see it, is a guy named Arthur Kurtz wrote a book a few years ago. It's a history of AA. It's not conference approved, but it's still the best history book about AA I ever read. And the name of the book was Not God. And that's how he identified Alcoholics Anonymous. We are a bunch of people who are not God. We have all demonstrated that, to our satisfaction anyway, and to the world's satisfaction. There's never been a more ungodlike group in the history of the world, including our founders. Huh? We are a bunch of sick folk. And the only time I'm dangerous in AA, I told you one instance, the only time I'm really dangerous is when I know I'm right. And if you can get a majority of me in the same room, you're screwed. And the only thing is, you know, when people like me and I get a majority and I treat you in such a way, that could kill you. You could drink because I'm right. People die. Now, of course, I've taught parliamentary law at the college level. I know parliamentary procedure. And I'll tell you one thing about parliamentary procedure. If I have 2/3 of the vote, you shut up. I'm going to talk to you guys for a while. You all stay awake. God love you. No, if I have a 2/3 majority, then you have nothing to say. Because you open your mouth, we'll step you down, right? I'm at the conference, and there's these two clowns. They're against something. You know, and they talked, and they talked. And then finally we got a vote. We're going to vote. And Pearson says, all right, with those two fellows, would you like to say, I'd have shot him. I'd have killed him. He has him give another speech. One more time. And we finally voted. And you know, in AA, at the conference, if we don't have substantial unanimity, if we don't have almost like two, everybody but two, we postpone it. Ah, well, wait another year. I wish we did that at the group level. I wish we'd do that at the intergroup level sometimes. I surely wish we'd do it at the area assembly level, where you get one more than half, screw you, we're going to pass it, you know. But not at the conference. They'll put it off another year. You know, there are no emergencies in AA. Alcoholics have emergencies, but AA doesn't, okay? Put it off another year. Get substantial unanimity. Never mind if you have 2/3. Let them talk. See, because we have found out something, haven't we? Many times in Alcoholics Anonymous, the minority was right. And we only found it out later, or it's because we were willing to postpone, because we were willing to not jump into things and stuff it down people's throats, we found out that that thing I talked about, the gay groups being listed in the international, when that was first conceived, everybody was against it. But when people got to the conference and made some speeches and we heard some sense, well, they heard some sense. So many times the minority is correct. Isn't that scary, huh? We can kill people being right. We really can. We have. We have killed people being right. One of the things I'm talking about, the second principle, we're not God. It seems, this is really a personal opinion of mine now, but it seems in AA in recent years, we've got some really oracles at Delphi going here. You know what I mean? You know, in the ancient Greece, they used to have this cave, and people would go and yell into the oracle, into the cave at Delphi there. And, of course, the wind was blowing in the cave, and there was some water running, but there was a high priest there. And he would interpret for you what the cave said, see what I mean, after you paid him. And we got these guys in AA now, I call them the David Koreshes of AA, where they're going to explain with guides and tapes and everything what this book really says. Now, Bill told me, he said, because I was an intellectual, the dummy school teacher used to tell. He said, this book was written so that anyone who reads at the ninth grade level can read and understand this book. And I checked that out with the reading experts at Palomar and at Miracosta, and they all say the same thing. Yeah, this book, well, maybe not the Four Horsemen part, but, you know, this book, who the hell wrote that? I'd like to know. It wasn't Bill. Anyway, it wasn't Bob either. We have people that say, now I believe that Bill Wilson had divine guidance. I do. That's, you don't have to believe that. That's what I believe. I believe, you know, when he took the six steps of the Oxford movement and put them into 12 steps for people like me, that's the greatest thing that was ever done in the history of the world for alcoholism. Because I couldn't take six steps, two big steps. But 12, I can do 12. A little bit at a time. I'm retarded. I'm retarded emotionally and spiritually. And so when Bill, you know, and I read when he said, when he wrote that, he was trying to, what am I going to do with the six steps? And he laid down and took a nap. And he got up, and in 5 minutes, he had written the 12 steps, the original 12 steps. You don't think he did? But I do not believe that this is a holy document. I do not believe that it is a Bible where it needs to be interpreted by high priests for me. There's a bunch of guys in Texas. Why are they always in Texas? You know what I mean? You know? I guess it's the sun. I don't know. These David Koreshes. He was from Texas, didn't you? They, you know, you have to have study guides. You have to be enlightened. You have to be led through this book. All you got to do is read this book and do it. It's a book of action. Here's what the trustees said. The trustees said, the fellowship, no, that's not it, the individual AA member does not need another person or institution to think for him or her. In fact, this could be a very bad thing. Part of the beauty and magic of AA is that persons from all walks of life with varied concepts may benefit from the big book, the steps, the traditions, and the concepts from their own point of view. Placing guidelines on paper seems to say, this is the way, the only way. See? I have a concept of God, and that is my concept of God. And it's not your concept of God, nor I expect you to accept my concept. That's what we're doing here. We're a bunch of iconoclasts staying sober together. And we have these traditions to protect us from each other and from these gurus. Now, sponsorship accepted. I remember in the car going to when I was new. I told you I was a revolutionary left-wing radical. And Skip and Pat and our sponsor Bill and this jarhead Al, this other guy, Colonel, excuse me, Sully. Sully's neck is very red, too. Did you notice that? These guys and I used to get almost into fights about politics, see? because we were so different. And so then Bill made a rule. He said, you could not talk about politics in the car. So I was all well and good. See, we're riding along and in the back seat there, you know. And Nixon was the president then. We're going through San Clemente, okay? And all of them, they'd all look at each other. And then when we get to the Western White House, they go. And then Bill get pissed off at me. Because I'd start screaming obscenities, you know what I mean? And we're all so different, you know what I mean? And we're all coming from all these different places. And this book fits us because we're not God. We can't tell other people how they need to do it. We're not God. Maybe there's a third principle. And maybe the third principle is courtesy, huh? I don't know if they had problems with this in AA from the very beginning, but I know my home group's a great AA meeting, the AA workshop, and we have speakers sometimes drive 120, 150 miles to come and share. And we've got some losers who like to stand around in the back of the hall and talk. That's all right. They didn't come to AA to get sober. They came to get laid, okay? But they like to talk right in the foyer where it annoys everyone in the meeting and that kind of thing. And then there's the people who refuse to come back from a break. Even though the speaker drove 150 miles, they can't walk 30 feet to come back in and take their seat. And there are people in meetings that pop off while other people are talking. And there are people who cross-talk who say, well, I know what so-and-so said, and I don't agree with that, and he's full of balloon juice, and all these different ways that we're rude to each other. I don't know about you, but I never met a drinking alcoholic in my life who wasn't completely, including me, completely, and including her, completely self-obsessed. And self-obsessed people are not courteous people. They're away from me and, you know. And when we come in here, we're supposed to change. And the steps will change us. And the tradition give us directions on how to be courteous to each other. And if we don't have courtesy in here, we haven't got anything. Because that means we're not growing and we're not changing. And that always leads to problems. That's that little girl at the beginning when I was talking about it, that always leads to problems. And somehow, some way, we're going to have to get back to courtesy in AA. We have problems, right? Some of the problems we have as a result of the tremendous number of treatment centers and treatment programs in the last few years, so that so many people from AA are coming from treatment programs where they've been given certain facts that aren't true. That all addictions are addictions are addictions. I cannot identify with a heroin addict. And I do not believe that a heroin addict can interfere with me. Now, it said right in, that Reggie read so well tonight, right in the tradition it says, we don't want to deny anybody Alcoholics Anonymous. Why would we want to deny anybody a chance to come in here? Look at what it's done for us. Saved our lives. Made us happy, joyous, and free. Have enough money to buy breakfast, for Christ's sakes. You know? Yeah, my first time I saw a $20 bill in my wallet, I almost fell over. What the hell is that? We don't want to deny anybody. There's an old poem that I love so much that I always equate it with AA. It says, they called me a rebel and a thing to flout. They drew a circle and shut me out. But love and I, we knew the way to win. We drew a circle and shut them in. And shut them in. So I don't care what else you use, myself. And then if you want to read the literature, Bill wrote Problems Other Than Alcohol. You know, he said there's three questions. Can a person who's not an alcoholic join AA? No. No. We only have one requirement for membership. Did you ever hear of an organization only has one requirement for membership? I joined, or tried to join a lot of organizations, but they had requirements, so I couldn't join. And they would have 12 requirements or 15 requirements or 97 requirements. We only have one. And so if we only have one, that's got to be a hell of a requirement. It's got to be important. And that requirement is that we have a desire to stop drinking. One requirement. One requirement. A desire to stop drinking. Okay? Now, my little honey down here, my little daughter Jan, who's got going on 8 years of sobriety, huh? She was a pothead, too. You're really anonymous here today, aren't you? You know, her last little stash of pot, she realized she had to give up after she got in the program, you know, so she put it in the trash. And the garbage man couldn't understand why this woman was standing on the sidewalk going, "Goodbye. Goodbye." The garbage man said, "That woman was really attached to her garbage." And my son Chris, who's got 7 years now, just the other day, huh? Crack cocaine got him here. Boy, he was quick. Like one of those little birds at the beach. But they're both alcoholics, thank God. Well, they came by it honestly. It's in the genes, you know. And so some with the treatment centers, we get many people dumped in here who don't know what Alcoholics Anonymous is. They think it's a self-help group. We are not a self-help. We are a God-help group. This is a spiritual way of life. Reggie read it. Each group is a spiritual entity. Why did they say that? It's a spiritual entity. It's not a psychological entity. It's not a, you know, it's just spiritual. Bill used to say to me, when I was flying in meetings, I think they call it dumping today. Here's a term. Dumping, you know, it has two meanings, doesn't it? Both of them mean the same thing, you know. Bill would tell me, in the meetings we talk about the solution. He used to always say that. AA is a solution. We don't have any answers in AA, he used to say. He used to say, we don't even know the goddamn questions. It's a solution, a solution, a solution, singular. One solution of every problem that I will face in my life. And in the meetings, we talk about the solution. We talk about getting sober, staying sober, and growing spiritually. Our problems we talk about with our sponsor, he told me. And that's always made sense to me. I go to some meetings nowadays. I go to the meeting when I'm leaving, I need a meeting. I got all the dumping done, but you know, or we talk about, ready? Issues. I love issues. Even better than that, though, is relationships. And, of course, addicts in AA. But I have no problem. And, of course, time is going to take care of this, isn't it? When Jan's delegate, or my son Chris's delegate, Brent is... if Brent is delegate... they all use drugs and alcohol, both. There won't be any deal. It's only, you know, sometimes, not there are not many, but there are a few really old timers who are opposed to any mention of drugs at all in the program. I was in Wyoming a while back, and these guys, if a guy's in a meeting and he says, "And I smoke some pot," they jump, "Get out! Get out of the meeting! Get out!" And they don't want to talk about drugs because they take them. All prescribed, of course, by a reputable doctor. So they don't want anybody talking about drugs in here. They don't drink alcohol, and that takes care of that. Does NyQuil count? No. All years I did service. I won't even bore you with the service that I've done in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did that to stay sober, because that's what Margie and Bill taught me the night I got here. That anything I do, I'm doing for Cliff, and that if I stay sober, I'm well paid. But I also did a lot of service and worked real hard in Alcoholics Anonymous and worked to protect these wonderful traditions, because I thought maybe a couple of my kids might need this. And I wanted AA to be, for them, the same program it was when I got here. And so all the work I've done has paid off, in my personal opinion, because both of my kids, when they needed it here, and the one that's, he's being 12-step this weekend, and this wonderful Al-Anon here, oh, she's beautiful. She and her mother are two of the greatest examples of the power and the steps that I ever saw. And she's the, we call them DCMs, I don't know what the hell they call them. No. DRs? DR? Yeah. Damn, Republican. She's very active in service. And, you know, her mother was the example for her to follow. Her mother did the same thing in Al-Anon as I've done in AA. We've worked to keep this thing the way it is. And who knows? Kitty has one stepdaughter that's working very hard at getting here, you know. And I watch a couple of my grandkids. Oh, jeez. And I'm sure that my kids are going to do the same thing. What was it a while back in Reflections book? It couldn't have been more than a month ago. The guy was talking about bonding. How we bond with each other. These traditions make it possible for us to bond with each other. And we don't just bond with each other, the people here in this room. You know, like Bill's in this room today. And Bill Wilson. And Jim Burwell. And your old sponsor. All these guys that were so instrumental and keeping these traditions going so that this program was here when we got here. We bond with all those guys that are dead. And we also bond with children unborn yet. So we can do that because of the traditions. We can bond with people who aren't even born yet. And we are working this morning so that when they need this program, it will be here. And it won't be psychologized, and it won't be bastardized. It will be Alcoholics Anonymous, one drunk talking to each other, who are not God. And to me, that's a very important aspect of my life. I worked with a guy, a hell of a guy. He got sober with Jesus. No, I'm not knocking him. Oh, I'm sorry. But, I mean, he had gotten sober 15 years before in his church, and he was a wonderful guy. He was a wonderful example of good sobriety. And he was the electrician for the district, and I was the drama teacher, and we were building this theater, putting the lighting in, and we really got to be good friends and talked about sobriety. And a couple of guys that I sponsored came by one day and were whining, you know, and so I straightened them out. And later that day, the guy said to me, he said, I envy you one thing, and he had happy sobriety. I said, what's that, Bob? He says, when I die, my sobriety will die with me. Yours won't. Now, I was going to talk about how important AA's been to me in my personal life, but to hell with it. Jim stayed awake this far. At least I can do is... But Alcoholics Anonymous, booze surrendered me. Booze kicked my butt and made it possible for me to surrender and open myself up to the power of the universe so that I could begin to get well. And the 12 steps have reduced my level of immaturity to where, you'll have to take my word for this, I live most every day of my life happy, joyous, and free. And you'd have to realize what I was when I came here. These two kids know. how sick I was, and how bad I was, and how unhappy I was. And the steps have taken and reduced that level of immaturity to where I live comfortably in the world. And that's what serenity is. Serenity is living comfortable in your own skin. See, and the tradition protected me long enough so I could grow up and not screw this thing up. And anytime I give any kind of a service talk, I always talk about the most beautiful piece of literature I ever heard or ever read. And it wasn't in the big book. It wasn't in 12 and 12. It was in AA Comes of Age. And at the St. Louis Convention, where we adopted the concepts and the traditions, where Bill turned over AA to us. Wouldn't that be scary? This is the guy, by the way, who conceived of AA. It started in his mind. And he took it from the Oxford movement into Alcoholics Anonymous. He nurtured, and he took a whole year all by himself. He carried this program until he found Bob. And then for all the rest of his adult life, he nurtured this program and built it and wrote the books and wrote the pamphlet. And he turned it over to us. And he went around in the back of the auditorium, and they were voting on us taking over. And Bill said the most beautiful thing I ever read about AA. He said to himself, at last, every time we have any kind of a meeting where we're doing business in AA, or when we're at the conference, or whether we're in a group, or whether wherever we are, I always think we should start the meeting with that. AA, may she always be safe, even from me. Thanks.